The Haggadah tells us the story. Maisa Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shahil Mesubin b'Bnei Brak. The Chachamim, the great Chachamim, were gathered together in the city of Bnei Brak. V'hayu Mesaprim b'Yitziat Mitzrayim Koloto HaLayla. And all night long, the Leil HaSeder, they were speaking about Yitziat Mitzrayim. Ad Shebo'u Talmidehem V'yamru Lahem, until their students came to them and said, Rabotenu Higia Zman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit. Rabotenu, Rebbe, Rabbeinu, the time has come to say Kriyat Shema, the morning Kriyat Shema. Now it's a well-known theory that the discussions that night in Bnei Brak, and Bnei Brak of course was the city of Rabbi Akiva, regarded the Bar Kokhba revolt and whether or to what extent should these, the greatest of Chazal and their students, be involved. Higia Zman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit is code, then, that the time has come for the Geulah, for the redemption. The students are telling their teachers, Rabotenu, the Churban happened in the year 70, this is 65 years later, and we're urging you to join the revolt, for the time has come to throw off the shackles of Roman rule and to regain Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. And this, of course, is the backdrop and what's really going on here in this episode that the Haggadah tells us. This motif, the idea that Shachar, that dawn, is a symbol of Geula, of redemption, is well known and pervasive. V'hagid baboker chazdecha v'emunatcha b'leilot. At night is the time for emunah, when God is hidden, we have our faith. But the morning is the time to speak of God's outward and evident involvement with us. V'hagid baboker chazdecha, to thank God and to think of God's kindness in the morning. And there's really a beautiful medrash that explains this idea. Mizot hanishkafa kemo shachar. We're talking about a medrash in Shir HaShirim. Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafta, havu mahalchin bahada bikat arbel bekritzta. The two chachamim, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafta, were walking in the valley underneath the arbel. For anybody who has been in Israel near the Kinneret, a little bit north, there's a cliff called the Arbel. V'ra'u ayelet ha-shachar shabik'aura, and they watched as the sun came up. The ayelet ha-shachar, the dawn, the rays of dawn. Amalei Rav Chiya, Rabba lo Rav Shimon ben Chalafta, Rav Chiya said to Rav Shimon ben Chalafta, kach tiyeg u'atan shel Yisrael mitzavtzefet. This is the way the redemption of the Jewish people will come about, as it peeks through. B'tchilah hi ba'a kima kima. It starts out and comes very, very slowly, like the dawn. V'achar kach hi minatznetzet v'ba'a, and then it gets stronger and stronger until the light gets very, very shines beautiful and brightly. V'achar kach bara v'rava, v'achar kach m'ratevet v'holechet, and so on. Gets stronger and stronger. Kach b'tchilah, and the phrase that's used here, the proof text is from the Megillah. Bayamim ahem u'Mordechai yoshev b'shar ha-melech. At the beginning, Mordechai is in sackcloth, but as the Geulah comes, as the redemption comes in stages, v'achar kach u'Mordechai yatsa milefnei ha-melech b'levush malchut, Mordechai comes out in his royal clothes, v'achar kach la-Yehudim hayta orah v'simcha v'sason v'ikar, and afterwards, all of the Jewish people rejoice in the light and the goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God's redemption. And in fact, this medrash really leads me to my main point, and that is the connection between Geula and Tchelet. Tchelet, of course, the strings that we are told we must tie on to the corners of our beged with the tzitzit. V'natnu al tzitzit ha-kanaf p'til tchelet. Everyone is supposed to wear tchelet and white strings on the corners of their beged, the tzitzit, mitzvah tzitzit. And the connection really comes about by the continuation of the pasuk. The redemption happens, Mordechai yatza milifnei ha-melech b'levush malchut. Tchelet. The levush malchut that Mordechai wears is, of course, the tchelet, and there's so much that's been written on that. From a historical point of view, tchelet was lost somewhere around the 7th century. But for many hundreds of years previous to that, its use was sporadic and also restricted. And this was due to several reasons. First of all, it was very, very expensive, and it was hard to acquire. Certainly outside of the dye centers in Israel, where the chilazon, the marine sea creature that produced the tchelet, was caught in the Mediterranean Ocean. So certainly outside of Israel, tchelet was very, very hard to get. But even in Israel, when you're talking about the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th centuries, since the Romans wanted that lucrative dye industry as their own, they basically took control of all of the dyeing with shellfish, tchelet argaman. And I've argued elsewhere that specifically in Eretz Yisrael, the Romans saw the string of tchelet that the Jews wore as a sign of Jewish national pride. And as such, they looked to enforce these restrictions that maybe were empire-wide, but specifically in Israel, these restrictions were enforced, and again, especially in the 1st century and the 2nd century. At the time of the second revolt in the series of three, of course, the Churban was the first revolt, the great revolt against Rome. The third revolt we all know about, the Bar Kokhba revolt, which people talk about, and as I mentioned, and this is what was going on in Bnei Brak in the time of Rabbi Akiva. But there was a second revolt. It was called by the Mishnah, the Pulmus of Kitos, the Pulmus de Kitos, or also known as the Merid HaTfutzot, or the Diaspora Revolt. And here the Roman general Lucius Quietus took over the suppression of the Jews and ultimately led to the destruction of the entire community, the Jewish community of Alexandria. The Gemara talks about Meitei Lod, those who were killed in Lod and in the uprising at Lod. All of this is about that time, and we're talking about around the year 117. And specifically, then, Rav Yossi HaGalili declares that Tchelet Eino Ma'akevet HaLavan. He introduces this law that if one can't find Tchelet, one at least should keep the mitzvah of lavan in tzitzit, of white in tzitzit. And I believe that this is because of the Roman suppression that specifically happened in that time, specifically against the wearing of tchelet. And this continued all the way through the suppressions and the Hadrianic persecutions that happened in the wake of the Bar Kokhba revolt, through the time of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, as attested to also in the Sifrei of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, where he talks about the difficulty in obtaining tchelet, and he talks about it in metaphors and giant poisonous spiders and so on that are guarding the tchelet. But all of this, of course, is talking about the Romans and the suppression of the mitzvah of tchelet. Nonetheless, the mitzvah of tchelet was not completely eradicated until around the 7th century. And there's a common error that people think that tchelet was lost at the time of the Churban. This is not true. In fact, it was around, and people kept the mitzvah and kept using tchelet for close to 600 years afterwards. It was not lost with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but rather, as Rav Shabtai Rappaport puts it, with the destruction of the land of Israel. And this happened in the early 600s with the wars between the Byzantine Christians and the Persians, and then between the Christians and the Muslims, which resulted in Muslim control over Eretz Israel. Presumably, this, of course, according to Rav Herzog, who makes this suggestion, Rav Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog, who did so much work in research of tchelet, and he suggests that the Romans, who were using the dye factories to fund their war effort, when the Muslims came in, this, of course, would have been one of the first targets for destruction, and the Muslims did that, destroying the dye houses all the way up the Mediterranean as they pushed forward. And with that, the secrets of tchelet, its elusive marine source, the chilazon, and the process of obtaining and dyeing tchelet were lost not just to the Jews, but to the world as a whole. And so it lay, so it was for over 1,000 years. But in the mid-1800s, with the stirrings, early stirrings of Zionist of Zionist thinkers, particularly religious Zionist thinkers, because those were the earliest, I'm talking even before Herzl, you started to have this renewal in the question of, well, could we also try to find out where and what Tehillat was and where and how it could be obtained? And this was specifically around a certain question, because if you are going to come back to the land of Israel and you're religious, religious Jew coming back to the land of Israel, then the point of that, of course, is to build the Beit HaMikdash, to build the temple, and the point of that is to do and perform all of the avodot, all of the karbonot, all of the sacrifices within the Beit HaMikdash, within the temple. But there is a law that you are not allowed, the Kohen or the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to do any of the sacrifices, to perform any of the work inside of the Beit HaMikdash, the rituals around the Beit HaMikdash, unless you have the Bigdei Kehuna, the specific clothes of the Kohen Gadol, those beautiful garments that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, was supposed to wear. But of course, those are made predominantly of Tehillat. So without Tehillat, if you don't have Tehillat, you can't have the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, the Bigdei Kehuna. And if you don't have the Bigdei Kehuna, you can't perform all of the services in the Beit HaMikdash. And if you can't perform the services in the Beit HaMikdash, well, then what's the point of the Beit HaMikdash? And ultimately, what's the point of coming back to Israel? So this whole redemption and the whole idea of Shivat Zion kind of hinged on whether or not you had Tehillat. So one of the first people that dealt with this issue was the Tiferet Yisrael, and he has a monograph called the Kupat HaRochlim, which is often found in the Tiferet Yisrael Mishnayot before Seder Moed. And there he talks about the issue, and at least he puts forth the idea that, in principle, the only thing that matters as far as Tehillat goes, it's not the source, there's no specific source, but rather it's the characteristics of the Tehillat. It has to be a fast eye that doesn't fade, and it has to be the proper blue color. But if you have those characteristics, then any dye would work. And so theoretically, at least, you could go to the laboratory and you could find a dye which is suitable, has the right color, lasts, doesn't fade. That would be okay, halachically kosher for Tehillat. This was the Tiferet Yisrael's opinion. A young Hasidish Rebbe wrote against the Tiferet Yisrael a few years later, and he argued that the Tiferet Yisrael was missing a very, very important Tosefta in Menachot, Tehillat min ha-chilazon kasher. The Tehillat must come from the chilazon, evi shelo min ha-chilazon pasul. You can't have Tehillat unless it comes from a chilazon, a specific marine source. This Rebbe, of course, was Rav Gershon Henich Leiner, the Radziner Rebbe, grandson of the Meshiloach, son of the Beis Yaakov, and a brilliant Talmudist, Talmudic thinker, halachist, Hasidish writer, and so on. Okay, well then, the Radziner Rebbe must have felt good about himself in the sense that here was an older, great Talmud Chacham, and he shown that this great Talmud Chacham, the Tiferet Yisrael, was missing a point. But on the other hand, I imagine, and maybe I'm embellishing a little bit, maybe it's a little melodramatic, but I see the Radziner going to sleep that night and not being able to sleep. Because he had single-handedly now just wiped away the possibility for finding the Bigdei Kehuna, and therefore for rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, and ultimately bringing the redemption, the Geulah, to Am Yisrael. And of course, this is something that the Radziner could not abide. And so I don't think it's surprising that the Radziner later in life decided that he had to figure out the solution to this problem of not having Tehillat. Well, if the solution was not to go into the laboratory and synthesize some kind of a new dye, there was only one solution, according to the Radziner, and that was to go out and find the chilazon, to find the missing marine creature that was the source of the Tehillat dye. And this he did. He decided to, at least, try. And he made an attempt by leaving Radzin, leaving Poland, where he and his Hasidim lived, taking along no one but his shamish and his son Mordechai, he went and traveled all the way to Naples to the newly opened aquarium in the city of Naples that had all of the different fish and marine life from the Mediterranean, and he believed that there he could find the Tchelet, and the story goes on, and I don't have to tell it now. The Radzin Rebbe believed that he did find the Chilazon. It was a cuttlefish. He came back to Radzin. He opened the dye factory, and all of his Hasidim, mainly his Hasidim, but also Breslov Hasidim, the Breslov Hasidim accepted his Tchelet because they had a tradition from Reb Nachman that before Mashiach, the Tchelet would be found. So the Radziner Hasidim accepted the Tchelet. No one else really accepted the Tchelet here and there. There were people, certainly no other Hasidim and no Misnagdim really. Rav Gershon Henoch's Tchelet didn't catch on. And the arguments against it are not only political or, you know, other non-specific arguments, but there were specific arguments against the Radziner Tchelet. It faded, as a matter of fact, when you washed it with soap, and that was a problem. The cuttlefish had problems with it in determining that it was the Chilazon. The Rebbe got the dye from dead cuttlefish that were brought back from the ocean, from Italy, and that's not supposed to be the way that the Chilazon is supposed to only be able to give its dye when it's freshly killed and so on. So there were, you know, inyani, as you say, as they say, very specific and to the point arguments against the Radzin Tchelet. But I think that the decisive argument against the Radzin Tchelet was given by Rav Herzog, who wrote a doctorate in 1914, about 25 years later, against the Radzin Tchelet. The doctorate is really a tour de force of all of the halachot and everything that was known about Tchelet at the time, archaeology, philology, marine biology, everything you could want to know about what could possibly be the true Chilazon and what was Tchelet in ancient times. And as part of that, he sent samples of the Radziner Tchelet all over Europe to three different laboratories in Germany, in France, and in England. And he received back from the scientists of the time, the chemists, that the blue that the Radziner Rebbe was using actually had very, very little to do with the cuttlefish, with any marine source whatsoever. It happened to be that it was really due to the additional chemicals that were added, specifically the iron filings that were added, and the iron mixed together with the nitrogen and a little bit of carbon created a reaction that resulted in ferric ferrocyanide, which is Prussian blue. And this really, really doesn't have much to do with the cuttlefish. What the cuttlefish provides is incidental. And so Rav Herzog says categorically that this could not be the source of ancient Tchelet, because the Chazal would never have only demanded using a very specific Chilazon when the additives or the components that are given by that Chilazon are just incidental. So that was a whole story. Herzog himself was never able to determine what the Chilazon was, although he has one very, very major suggestion, which is the Murex trunculus, and some other suggestions. Those other suggestions really never panned out. They were really nothing more than very, very highly theoretical, but subsequent research has shown that it really is, in fact, the Murex trunculus. Rav Herzog was never able to totally determine it. In his day, he believed that the Murex trunculus gave only a purple dye. That was solved in around the year 1985. That problem was shown to be not true. The Murex trunculus was shown that at a specific time in the dye process, if someone exposes the dye solution to sunlight, then you actually get a beautiful, beautiful sky blue dye. And with that, the enigma, or the question of what the ultimate source was, what the authentic source of the Tchelet dye was with the Murex trunculus, was really put to rest. And since then, I've been involved in working together with Joel Guberman and Ari Greenspan in bringing the Tchelet, and really our founder and mentor, Rav Eliyahu Tevger, is the one who really put the whole process together, took the ideas of Murex Tchelet from just the laboratory and the library and into the Beis Medrash and out into the world, and creating tzitzit. And thank God now tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people are wearing Tchelet, many, many Rabbanim, And that's, I think, a story that which is well known. But from the earliest days, Tcheret is deeply connected to the land of Israel. Some philologists even argue that the word Kinaan meant dire. The earliest Midrashim, K'chumi Zimrat Ha'aretz, that Yaakov tells the brothers as they go down to Egypt to see Yosef, K'chumi Zimrat Ha'aretz, take from the most beautiful produce of the land. The Medrash Rabbah, Parshas Miked, says, K'chumi Zimrat Ha'aretz b'kleichem, Rabbi Yoshua Misachnin b'shem Rabbi Levi, Devarim Shehem Mezamrin ba'olam. The things that the world sings their praises. And what is that? The Chilazon, the source of the Tcheret. And as we've seen, the restrictions against wearing Tcheret correlate with the loss of Jewish sovereignty. And ultimately, the loss of Tcheret occurs when Eretz Yisrael is decimated, when the land of Israel is decimated, and the Jewish community there is at its lowest point. And as the stirrings for redemption begin, as the stirrings, as the yearning for Ge'ulah start to take a practical application in the 1800s, so too the yearning for the renewal of Tcheret. Ultimately, Tcheret has been completely restored in the land, in Eretz Yisrael, and in Yerushalayim, Shechubra La Yachdav. And I don't think that this is any coincidence, because as we started the discussion, Tcheret is so closely related to Ge'ulah. Rabotenu, Higi Azman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit. The time has come for the Shema of Shacharit, which brings in the Geula, which brings in the dawn, and the dawn of redemption. Well, of course, the second Mishnah in Brachot has to be ringing in everybody's ears. Me'e Matai Korin Et Shema B'Shacharit. What does the Mishnah say? When can one begin to say that first Shema in the morning? What is considered morning? What is considered the dawn? Mishayakir ben Tchelet Lavan. When a person can tell the difference between the Lavan and the Tchelet. When one looks at the Tchelet. When one has Tchelet. And again, the idea of the redemption and the Geulah so closely bound up in the mitzvah of Tchelet. And even if one is not a Zionist, the unfolding of history is compelling. And certainly if one is a Zionist and one believes or prays that the state of Israel is or should be the Atchalta de Geula, the earliest beginnings of the redemption, or to use the phrase that Rav Herzog himself coined, Reshit Smichat Geulatenu, that first flowering of our redemption, it can be no coincidence that the state of Israel has taken its flag as Tchelet and Lavan, as the blue and the white. And so, in our family, we've adopted a new minhag, a new tradition. When we reach the story of Bnei Brak, Higia Zman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit, as the students tell their teachers, I take out my talit and wrap myself in it and kiss the Tchelet strings, and I recite a beautiful tefillah that Rav Nachman of Breslov used to say when he put on his tzitzit every day. Galui v'yadua lefanecha, it is apparent and obvious in front of you, God, sheritzoneinu la'asot ritzoncha, that we want to do what you want us to do. Va'anu chafetzim u'mitga'agim lekayem mitzvah tchelet shebetzitzit, and we yearn to keep the mitzvah of tchelet in the tzitzit, as we should, as you commanded us in the Torah. V'im hayinu zochim limtzo tchelet litzitzit, hayinu mefazrin hom rav, kedei lekayem ha-mitzvah b'shremut. And Rav Nachman says, if only we could find the tchelet for the tzitzit, we would be willing to pay any amount to be able to keep this mitzvah. Ach ba'avanotenu harabim charav beit mikdashenu v'nitalam achilazon. But in our weakness and our sins, the temple has been destroyed, and the chilazon has been lost and forgotten. Ba'avonoteinu. U'me'az ve'harayin anu zochim lekayem mitzvotecha b'shremut. And we've never since then, since the loss of Tchelet, we have not been able to keep the mitzvah in its perfect form. And he goes on with the tefillah of Nachman, v'rachem aleinu, Please have mercy on us, God, uvnei yurcha b'mehera b'yameinu, and build up your city, Yerushalayim, speedily in our times. V'havienu l'shalom l'eretz ha'kdosha, and bring us again, this is in the early 1800s. V'havienu l'shalom l'eretz ha'kdosha, bring us to our land, our holy land, in peace. V'zakenu sheyachzor v'yitgaleach yilazon, and may we merit to see the restoration and the discovery of the chilazon. And may we be able to merit the keeping of the mitzvah of Tchelet Shebetzitzit. And then I add my own tefillah. Ashreinu shezachinu lirot tchilat ge'ulateinu. I praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have been able to merit being part and seeing the beginning of our ge'ulah. B'niyat ir kodshenu v'kibbutz galiot le'artzeinu. We are witnessing, we have witnessed, and we every day witness the building of our holy city, Yerushalayim, and the ingathering of the exiles into our land, Eretz Yisrael, Eretzenu HaKadosha, our holy land. Chazarat Gilui HaChilazon. We've merited seeing and experiencing the renewal and the restoration, the rediscovery of the Chilazon, of that ancient sea creature, v'kiyum mitzvah tchelet shebitzitzit, and the restoration of the mitzvah of tchelet anor tzitzit. Uchashem shezachinu lahakir bein tchelet l'lavan, and just as we have been fortunate enough to be able to see with our own eyes and distinguish between the gorgeous, beautiful tchelet blue strings and the white strings on the tzitzit, kach nizke l'geula shlema, so too may we see the complete and full redemption, v'chagigat ha-pesach b'shana ha-ba'a b'Yerushalayim, v'yikuyam banu ha-katuv, la-Yehudim, ha-ita ora v'simcha v'sason v'yikar, for all the Jews, wherever they live, may there be light and joy, peace and prosperity, safety and salvation. Chag Pesach Sameach.